Everybody, good evening. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. I may be a little bit froggy tonight, but I think we can get through the whole program tonight. What do you think, Kathy? You have the bag of glucose there handy, I notice, and the what do you call that thing you're hanging on? What is that thing called? A hanger-on thing? An IV pole. Thank you very much. Hello, are you with me tonight? There she is, ladies and gentlemen, Miss Catherine Bay, our producer. I have been asked to remind the listeners of this program, all 38 of you, that tomorrow, November 15th, is a national day of protest against the passage of Prop 8 in California. There's going to be a coordinated protest across the country. You can find out about your city by going to a website, jointheimpact.com. 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 And you can find the location of the protest in your city if there is one held. So check it out. The reaction to what the homophobic, anti-human rights, anti-love, anti-family, anti-child gang of religious nutballs did in California, Arizona, Arkansas is the reaction to that is building across the country. And don't forget, Stonewall started out as a police raid against people who were having a good time in a bar. So, who knows what will come? It never fails to amaze me what event can trigger a revolution, whether it's a revolution of ideas or a revolution of, I mean, a real revolution of blood in the streets. What little event can trigger that tipping point where people say, okay, that's enough? So, you never know in these times. But tomorrow, November 15th, Cassidy, it says here the protest here in Atlanta will be in downtown Atlanta starting at 1:30. So let's go. All right? Okay. Go to jointheimpact.com to find out about your town. Edie, who is stuck in Dogpatch, Alabama, writes, Mike, I've wondered myself why so many men in their prime, according to the TV commercial, so desperately need Viagra or other such drugs. We were talking about this the other night. It seems to dovetail with the arrival of Republicans. All of a sudden, men couldn't get it up anymore. And all these drugs became... Yeah, and when you I digress from Edie's email here for a moment. When you look at the commercials, every single person in those commercials is a very handsome man, a very attractive woman. They're all grinning like Cheshire cats. And for some reason, these men can't get an erection. I mean, they don't look like they're dealing with it. Now, I understand. Please don't misunderstand. I understand that there are certain physical conditions that deny a man blood flow to his penis, which will give him an erection so he can have conjugal bliss or whatever bliss he wants with his boyfriend, girlfriend, wife, husband, whatever. I understand that. There are physical conditions that do that. But usually, not always, but usually those physical conditions that prohibit sexual relations or sexual intercourse are usually manifest by the person looks kind of, you know, slouched maybe, kind of pale maybe, kind of out of energy maybe. None of these men in the commercials look anything like that. They're all handsome, virile looking. There's always a sunset or a bathtub sitting out in the middle of a desert or whatever. They're climbing mountains, they're water skiing, they're horseback riding, but for some reason, they just can't get it up. But I digress. Edie writes, Mike, I wonder myself why so many men in their prime, according to the commercial, so desperately need Viagra or other such drugs. On the other hand, young women, according to ads aimed at them, cannot sleep and must have Ambien. Edie writes, there must be some reason that these phenomena are occurring at the same time. Your thoughts, Edie? Well, on this particular subject, Edie, I really don't have any thoughts about it at all. I other than the fact that I think it's hysterically weird. That's my default word. Always has been. Weird. That starting with, I believe it starts with the Bush 2 administration, the first term that was stolen back in 2000. That seems to me to, I haven't taken notes on these damned commercials, but it seems to me that that's when they started. To the point where every time you turn around, there's another commercial about erectile dysfunction. It's astonishing. Does this happen in other countries? Are other countries chock-a-block on their television with commercials about not being able to get sexually aroused? Men can't do it, and they're all handsome, virile men with gorgeous middle-aged wives? I mean, what? Oh, never mind. Governor Sarah Palin was really a hit at the Republican Governors Association convention this week in Miami, so much so that when the RGA made their announcement of who was going to be their leaders, of course, they left the hoe from Wasilla completely off. Nobody voted for her to be in any of the organization's leadership positions. They had a press release. Republican Governors Association announces new leadership lineup today after their annual meeting concluded Thursday in Miami. South Carolina Governor Mark Sanford was voted RGA chairman, taking over the top job from Texas Gov Rick Perry, who will now serve as finance chairman. Mississippi Gov Haley Barber is vice chairman. Florida Gov Charlie Crist will serve as chair for the annual RGA gala. And Georgia Governor Sonny Perdue will head up the recruitment effort and Klan meetings. I just added that last part. Hawaii Governor Linda Lingle, Vermont Governor Jim Douglas, Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty will also sit on RGA's executive committee. Where's Sarah? She was there. She gave lots of speeches. Oops. I said I wasn't going to talk. No, I didn't say I wasn't going to talk about her. I said I was not going to play her scratchy, scritchety voice anymore. No, I guess I said I wasn't going to talk about her. Well, I just thought that was interesting. I got a couple of emails in the past week about my prolific habit of, what's the term the Republican Beebleberries like to use? Oh, name-calling. That's right. Name-calling. That's all you can do. You just name-call. You can name-calling. That is very reminiscent of, that term is very reminiscent of when I used to attend nursery school. I used to attend nursery school. That's what we called it way back in the day. And on the playground, I can still remember the teachers or the babysitters, whatever they were, who were instructed to take care of us, who insisted there would be no name calling. So every time I have heard Republicans use that term, name calling, you're just name calling. That's what you're doing. You know, when you call Bush a warmonger, or a war criminal. Name calling. There you go. You can't make a coherent argument, so you got to fall back on name calling. Ah! Reminds me of when I was a child. But my position on the name calling thing is very clear. Sarah Palin was pimped by John McCain, which by definition makes her a hoe. McCain did put her out there like a hoe, which makes him, by definition, a pimp. The right-wing radio talkers are liars, and you can put a modifier in there like I do sometimes, goddamn liars, Bush policy at Guantanamo is terrorism, and Bush's global policies are war crimes. So what's the problem? We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Turn off your light. Go to bed with Mike Malloy every night on Nova M Radio.
When did you record that? Is that one of those nights? Is that one of the nights you used silk skin or what is that skin? So what is that stuff called?
That would be night skin.
Oh, night skin. I don't know.
Buy some today.
I like pumice myself, but. So name calling. I guess I was just brought up by in a low rent neighborhood by with lots of low rent peers, low rent education, low rent parents, low rent everybody. Labeling somebody a son of a bitch when they really act badly was considered an element of truth. Calling someone a terrorist like George W. Bush to me is not a contradiction at all. By any definition of the term. I mean, what do you call somebody who goes into somebody else's country, kills people, makes sure that the leader is hanged, disrupts their infrastructure to the point where 6 years later, people can't even get a glass of clean water? What do you call that? Huh? A bunch of freaks from Saudi Arabia came to this country and blew up the trade towers, and we've been fighting against the terrorists ever since. But what does that make George Bush? Well, I'm a terrorist, very simply. Sarah Palin is an idiot. The right-wing talkers on radio are liars, skunks, and stinkers. So?
You're name-calling.
Yeah, okay. Finally, somebody, Patrick Leahy, Vermont senator, says that he believes Lieberman should be given the push, booted from his chairmanship of the Homeland Security Committee. In an interview with Vermont Public Radio today, Senator Leahy said, and I'm quoting, according to Talking Points memo, quote, "Every senator will have to vote the way he or she believes they should. I'm one who does not feel that somebody should be rewarded with a major chairmanship after doing what he did. I felt some of the attacks that he was involved in against Senator Obama went way beyond the pale. I thought they were not fair. I thought they were not legitimate. I thought they perpetuated some of these horrible myths that were being run about Senator Obama. I would feel that had I done something similar, that I would not be chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee in the next Congress." End quote. You know, Obama has already said that he held no grudges against Lieberman, which, you know, it's one thing to be Christ-like where it concerns that sort of thing. And I think Obama is I'm not saying he's trying to be Jesus, but you know, he's, again, Obama is walking a very thin line. This is a racist country. The fact that Obama won by about 7 or 8 percentage points where it concerns the popular vote, and one in a landslide where it concerns the electoral vote, still does not eliminate the fact that most white people in this country are racist down to their cellular level. So I would assume that part of this conciliatory attitude on Barack Obama's part has something to do with that. Being the first black president, he can't step in and start kicking the white men's asses that tried to politically and otherwise probably do him in. If Barack Obama were white, like Patrick Leahy is white, you see, Leahy is white, Lieberman is white, let's see, 1 + 1 = 2. So Leahy can go ahead and say these things. Several senators, I don't know if that means Republican or Democrat, have voiced, I guess Democrats, have voiced qualified support for Lieberman. And the rumors in Washington, a few of them are said to be lobbying in his favor behind the scenes. I see, this is, excuse me, to me, this is one of the problems with Democrats. After being bitch-slapped and kicked in the groin and accused of everything other than eating small children alive, Barack Obama is, and so many Democrats do the same thing. Well, okay, you know, politics ain't beanbags, so we're okay. Just like Biden going over to Cheney's house. Can you imagine walking into a place where Lynn Cheney, where she's sitting there like some gargoyle? Jesus, I couldn't do that. Biden goes over to the vice president's residence, the Naval Observatory. Is that where it is? And they make nice. Biden makes nice. I'm sorry. This is why I would never again, after one aborted attempt, run for, pardon the expression there, run for public office, because I'm too mean and hateful and vindictive. But having watched Dick Cheney for 8 years, to even approach him, I would have sent an email. Hey Dick, I'll be there the 21st. Get your ass out of my house. Remember when the crazy white people showed up, demanding that Al Gore get out of Dick Cheney's house? Remember that? Remember those disgusting, filthy sons of bitches, more name calling, showing up before, Bush was sworn in the first time after the theft, and demanding that Al Gore get out of Dick Cheney's house? Remember that?
Oh. You can't even finish. You're talking a lot, but you're not.
Primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. Regarding the visit to the vice president's residence by Joe Biden, walking into the building that houses the cyborg, Dick Cheney. Prairie 2 writes, other than being a sore loser, Cheney would not have been insulted by anything Biden said. Calling him the most dangerous vice president ever would not be an insult to Cheney. Biden just kept clutching the vial of holy water and whispering that prayer. How does it go? Yeah. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. Yeah, oh God. Adam Cohen, writing in the Times today, in the little section called Editorial Observer, which is not an op-ed column, is not editorial, it's distinct and entirely separate. I don't ask me how, but I guess it's like a signed editorial. But he writes about how there is pressure from the Democrats on Obama to restore the rule of law. Now, just the headline is enough to get your attention. Democratic pressure on Obama to restore the rule of law. What happened was, in the Senate hearing room a couple of months ago, before Barack Obama won the election, there was a group of law professors and lawyers and civil libertarians that got together and outlined one of the biggest challenges that will be faced by whoever the next president was going to be back in September when it hadn't been decided yet. And that challenge, bringing the United States government back under the rule of law. See, most of us, myself included, even though I talk about this garbage day in and day out, most of us don't realize where we are, where it concerns being a nation of laws, not of men, generically speaking. You know what they meant. And how far into criminal behavior, outlaw behavior, the Bush crime family has taken us. We don't think about it because we're focused on other things. Like, well, is this the day that the country goes bankrupt? Is this the day that there are no more jobs at all available? Is this the day when everyone, every single working person is told, well, I'm sorry, but we can't afford to keep you on anymore? You know, that's the kind of stuff that most of us are worried about now. So we don't understand. We're not paying attention to what has happened. Legal traditions that have been degraded in this country, everything ranging from domestic spying to government secrecy. And as Cohen points out, the damage that has been done by Bush, Cheney, Gonzalez, and others is so grave that just assessing it will be an enormous task. Repairing it will be even more enormous. Think about that. Now, we've talked about this. You've emailed me about it. Your phone calls have been about it over the past 8 years. But it's been very incremental. It's the boiling frog thing, right? You put the frog in a beaker of cold water and slowly raise the temperature. And the frog never realizes it until he's dead. That's what has happened in this country. Incrementally, little tiny slices, civil liberties, habeas corpus. I mean, just go right down the list. What these name-calling rat bastards have done. Now, as Cohen points out, this is not a new complaint. Civil liberties advocates have been sounding the alarm for years during the Bush crime family. The difference now is that a Democrat is about to assume the presidency. And one of the most ardent defenders of civil liberties in his party, Senator Russ Feingold of Wisconsin, is dedicated to putting the restoration of the rule of law on the agenda of this incoming government. Now, Feingold has the support of the ACLU and other groups. You would think that the Republican pigs would be supporting this too, but of course not, because Republicans are incipient Nazis, every single one of them. You notice I'm not saying conservatives, I'm saying Republicans. The Republican Party in this country has been converted into that, a nest of Nazis. That's all it is. Start with the people at the top of the list in the media, all the way down to the scum that slither around the halls of Congress, all the way down to the scum that slither around the halls of state legislatures. These are incipient Nazis, every single one of them. Otherwise, they would be supporting, you see, conservatives, and all of a sudden I find myself, God forbid, agreeing more than I disagree with David Brooks, who writes for the New York Times. But Brooks is a conservative. He's not a Republican. And if you read his column, if you haven't, a good one to read would be the one that was that he published today. Go online, David Brooks, op-ed, New York Times. But Feingold now has a cause. Before the election, Adam Cohen writes, Feingold argued that whoever won should make a priority of rolling back Bush administration policies that eroded constitutional rights and disrupted the careful system of checks and balances. And now that Obama has won the election, there is both reason for optimism and increased pressure on the president-elect to keep his promises. And, of course, Feingold, being the mensch that he is, has been compiling a list of areas for the next president to focus on, including changing the Patriot Act, giving detainees greater legal protections, banning torture, banning cruelty, banning degrading treatment, amend the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act to restore limits on domestic spying, roll back the Bush crime family's dedication to classifying government documents, everything. Even Bush's poop and his urine is classified. Every time the scum goes overseas, they take a port-a-john. So Bush poops into a special container, and what do they do with it? Oh, my God. And he pees in a special. What do they do with it? Oh, well, it's secret. No, I'm sorry. That's secret. Secret poop. But it's just poop. No, it's secret. Secret poop. Now, a lot of these forms could be implemented directly by the next president. We've talked about this on the program before. It doesn't take an act of Congress. Obama could renounce Bush's views of executive power, including that in many areas, the president can act as he wants without restraint by Congress or the judiciary. Obama could also declare his intention not to use those God-damned signing statements, as Bush did, in record numbers, to reject bills that he sits there and signs into law, but then adds a codicil that says, oh, really, I don't mean this. Signing statements. Cohen writes, Congress also has work to do. Many of the excesses of the last 8 years have been the result of Feingold's colleagues' capitulation as much as presidential overreaching. Yeah, just like the capitulation on a much lesser level, because it really doesn't affect directly you and me, but the capitulation regarding Lieberman. Lieberman, this weasel, this rat, who completely ratted out his own party because the voters in his party back in Connecticut said, get out of town, Joe, we've had enough of you. So Lieberman, excuse me, I meant to mute the mic on that one, I'm sorry. So, oh, God. People listening, Jesus, God, what is this guy just finished high school radio? He coughs into the microphone?
Do you need a cough drop or some Viagra or anything?
No, but the saline or drip is starting to look real attractive. Where was I? Because of what the Democrats have allowed to happen, at any point along this trajectory into hell of the last 8 years that the Bush crime family has taken us, whether it's been in civil liberties, rule of law, domestic policies, foreign policy, at any point along the way, Supreme Court appointments, federal judiciary appointments, the Democrats could have stopped it, as the Republicans are going to try to stop every single thing Obama does. Watch what happens in the next 4 years. The Democrats not only could have tried to stop some of the more egregious acts by this filthy Bush administration, it could have stopped. At least it could have made the effort, but it did not. So Feingold concedes that restoring the rule of law will not be easy. And part of the problem is that it's hard to know how much damage has been done. Think about that. And then we'll talk about a little bit more when we come back.
Shuffling madness.
Nighty night, truth seekers. Time to snuggle up with your favorite screamer. More Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. So back to Adam Cohen writing in the editorial observer section on the op-ed page, or on the editorial page in the New York Times today, his piece about Democratic pressure on Obama to restore the rule of law, which, you know, when I read it, it kind of, Cohen puts it all together, kind of focuses what has to be done to get this country back on track. Just in that aspect, you know, I've said this before, and I'm sure you've said it before, there is not one single level of governance that the Bush crime family has not utterly corrupted or destroyed in 8 years. Everything. Foreign policy, domestic policy, everything. Everything. They have wrecked it. It is a monstrous train wreck. Now, as Cohen writes about Russ Feingold, Senator Feingold, who is pushing for this restoration of the rule of law. Cohen writes, restoring the rule of law will not be easy, Feingold concedes. Part of the problem is that it's hard to know how much damage has been done. Many programs like domestic spying and extraordinary rendition, you know, that's kidnapping people and sending them to another country to be tortured. Think about that for a second. It's astonishing. All of this has operated in the shadows. Run by this filthy piece of human waste, Dick Cheney. You know what's going to be happy to... Well, I shouldn't even say that. Anyway, Cohen goes on, it would be a mistake to overlook Congress's role. Members from both parties voted for laws like the Military Commissions Act of 2006, which stripped detainees of habeas corpus rights and looked the other way while the rule of law was diminished. And as Cohen writes, if the next president does not reverse the Bush administration's doctrines, Feingold fears that they will no longer simply be the policies of one extremist president. The danger is that they will be the nation's new understanding of the Constitution. Amen. So, given the fact that at this point, I'm sure Barack Obama has had pressure applied to put 100 different things at the top of the list. 100 different, number one, absolutely has to be handled, priorities, this immediately, January 21st, must be done, or the entire republic collapses. 100 of them up there. That's very true. But you know, the overarching truth of all this is the restoration, as Adam Cohen points out, the restoration of the rule of law, to undo the horrific damage, the incalculable damage, the damage that you and I don't have a clue that has been worked against our Constitution, our society, all of us, to undo that damage. And the chilling part of what Cohen wrote today is the fact that nobody knows how deep the cut has been. Has an artery been severed? Have we bled out already? Are we walking around thinking that we are still a republic when in fact we are not? I tend towards that idea. I just wonder, 30 years from now, when I'm not here, and if you're of a certain age, you're not going to be here either, but I just wonder if the historians are going to write about this monstrous administration in a factual, truthful manner. I wonder if the rule of law will be reestablished to the extent that people can write the truth. In so many totalitarian societies that are drifting into or become fascist, the idea of truth-telling ceases to exist. And it doesn't make any difference what the society is. Sometimes it reasserts itself, sometimes it doesn't. Most times it does not. But think of the societies around the globe whose histories have been utterly subsumed by the lies and the deceit and the militarism, the authoritarianism, the totalitarianism, the fascism. There's Chile. Think of that country. Think of what happened.
What do you mean, Mike? I don't know nothing about Chile, except it tastes good.
Not you, sir. Go away.
You sure got a foul mouth on you. Oh, God.
You all have heard of Father Roy Bourgeois, member of the Mary Knoll religious order for almost 40 years, priest. You know, when I say the horrible things I say against the Catholic Church, all of which, in my opinion, are deserved, I usually try to qualify it by saying I'm not talking about individual priests or nuns or lay workers who really do believe what Jesus said and work toward that end. Father Roy Bourgeois is one of them. The Vatican has informed him that he will be excommunicated next week for participating in a ceremony that Rome considers a sin, and that is the ordination of a woman as a priest. Roy Bourgeois is going to be excommunicated because he participated in... Now, this is a guy who he served as a missionary in Bolivia and El Salvador. And concerned by what he witnessed back in the 80s, he returned to the United States and became known nationally as a peace advocate. It was Father Bourgeois almost single-handedly who brought attention on the School of the Americas down at Fort Benning, Georgia, that whose sole purpose for being in existence was to take incipient little Nazis from Central and South America and teach them how to torture, murder, kill, detain. We did that. Our tax money did that. There's no escaping that. That's what we did. And it's still in operation, even though they've changed the name. And every year, Father Bourgeois, who lives in an apartment outside the gates of Fort Benning, leads that annual protest against the School of the Americas. The Roman Catholic Church is about to excommunicate him because he participated in and blessed the ordination of a woman. The hour. Malloy here on the Novem Radio Network. We're talking about Father Roy Bourgeois, the Mary Knoll priest, who has worked for the past 36 years for peace and justice, and he has been notified by the Nazi Pope in Rome that he is to be excommunicated next week because he participated in the ordination of a woman as a priest. Now, as pointed out by a couple of emailers, and most of us who've taken a comparative religion course or two or six understand this, were it not for the efforts of women 2,000 years ago, there would be no Christian church. There would be no Christian religion. It was the women early on who made sure that the religion, or I should say the teachings of Christ, would take root. Now, it was perverted beyond belief by the males who took over. But this is true, I think, in so many, if not all three, of the religions of the book. Judaism suffers the same aberrant telling, as does Islam. Women are you know, unclean. They're to be subjugated. They're to be controlled. Hence, all this talk about abortion. Oh, well, you know. That's murdering babies. No, it's not. It's a woman dealing with her own privacy out of the glare of the prying eyes of men who want to control her life. You don't have to be a weatherman to know which way the wind is blowing, especially not on this particular issue. So, Father Bourgeois said in an interview Quote, who are we to, as men to say that we are called by God to the ministry of priesthood, but women are not? That our call is valid, but theirs is not? We profess as Catholics that the invitation to the priesthood comes from God. And it seems to me that we are tampering with the sacred. End quote. Ooh, that's pretty, pretty much bordering on the talk of a heretic, Father Bourgeois. Huh? Now, again, this is a man who is a true peace advocate. This is a man who has worked tirelessly to stop the training of torturers, our training of torturers in Central and South America. He has written about what he witnessed in El Salvador in the 80s, Bolivia, other parts of Central and South America, as a result of our spending our tax dollars to train people to be beasts, to be killers, murderers, torturers, and then go back to their home countries and do just that. Now, the problem here is a couple of months ago, Father Bourgeois joined a ceremony in a Unitarian Universalist church in Lexington, Kentucky, in which a friend from the peace movement claimed ordination as a Roman Catholic priest, a woman, and Father Bourgeois gave the homily and put his hands on her as part of the ceremony. The woman claimed her ordination. She was not selected by Father Bourgeois. She claimed it. And he went along with it. He says he knew that excommunication was possible, but he thought it was unlikely. And then he got the note from the Nazi Pope summoning him to headquarters, Rome. The letter was dated October 21st from the Vatican's doctrinal watchdog, the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. Now, that's the same office that ran the Inquisition, the Spanish Inquisition, and, well, the Inquisition. And it's also the office that at one time was headed by the current Pope, who also was a member of the Nazi party when he was a young man in Germany, Cardinal Ratzinger. And he was warned by the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, the Inquisition office, that if he did not recant in writing, he would be excommunicated within 30 days. Father Bourgeois went on to say, quote, when I got that letter, I had to sit down. I felt nauseous. I thought, this is serious stuff. The first thought that came to mind was, how am I going to explain this to my dad and to my family? End quote. And then it's reported here, after weeks of prayer, Father Bourgeois informed the Vatican that he would not repent. And the woman, Janice Sevra Dujinska, it's apparently Polish or Eastern European. I know I'm not pronouncing it right. But Ms. Sevra Dujinska, a veteran agitator for women's ordination, is the 35th American woman to claim ordination from an increasingly vocal group known as Roman Catholic Women Priests. And the last two words are combined, women priests. She grew up in a Polish Catholic community in Milwaukee and said she felt called to the priesthood since she was a child. So a real man of Christ, Father Roy Bourgeois, has been told he's going to be kicked out of the church. His father, who is 95 years old, lives in Louisiana. Father Bourgeois went back to his hometown of Louisiana and told his 95-year-old father, his three siblings, and his 13 nieces and nephews what was going to happen. His father, according to the New York Times, cried a little, Father Bourgeois recalled, and then his father said, quote, God brought Roy back from the war in Vietnam, back from his mission work in Bolivia and El Salvador, and God's going to take care of him now. I support Roy, end quote. Now, on a practical level, Father Bourgeois faces the loss of his benefits and the $1,000 monthly he receives for living expenses. But he added this, quote, if I am without health care, I will be joining millions of people in the United States who don't have health care, end quote. Excommunication, for folks who don't know, according to the church, the Catholic Church, is one of the most severe ecclesiastical penalties that is available. The person is forbidden to receive the sacraments. And if you cannot receive the sacraments, then you cannot enter into heaven. And if you cannot enter into heaven in the Catholic superstition, then you are condemned to hell. Condemned to hell. Father Roy Bourgeois. Now, why do I bring all this up? Because I'm such an ardent opponent of religion. I do see it as a force of nihilism on this planet. I see it as something that religion has only done bad stuff. Only. There might be a few exceptions to that, in that maybe some religious orders during the Dark Ages kept alive the idea of science and math and so on and so forth, but most of those were Muslim or Arabic, and those terms are not interchangeable, so excuse me for making it sound as though they are, organizations that kept alive science and math and astronomy and the humanistic approach to life. And Father Bourgeois represents as far as I'm concerned, the spirit of the teachings of Christ. Peace, love your enemy as yourself, the golden rule, which most religions do embrace, and I do respect that. But as I see religion as a terrible, terrible, terrible negative force on the planet, I've also tried to make it clear that I see that certain people who subscribe to these religions really trying to do good works. Now, the fact that they subscribe to the religion does not mean that that's the reason they do good works, I don't think. You can certainly be a secular humanist or an atheist or a non-believer in religious superstition and do great work. Right? The fact that so many of these people are attached to religions is, to me, incidental. I think they are good people in spite of their attachment to the religious superstition. But Father Bourgeois, of all people, a man who lives, breathes, drinks, eats the idea of peace, to be excommunicated because he ordained a woman.
The blizzard of the world is across the threshold.
Participated in the ordination of a woman, I should say.
Of the soul.
Defining Anger Management. It's Mike Malloy, only on Nova M Radio.
Past the hour. Gotta love that song. What's that from? No, that's not from Dream Girls. What's that? I don't know. My brain is a little bit, you know, too much antibiotic. Now I'm going to get emails from people telling me. You know, I got emails from people telling me not to take a flu shot. Y'all must be out of your minds. Of course I get a flu shot. Always have. But that's not why I get these damn viral colds. I get these damn viral colds because I have a 4-year-old. Your phone calls when we come back at the bottom of the hour, which is just a few minutes, because I see a lot of people are in the queue. So we will get to your calls. All right, our economic correspondent sends us in. Prairie 2. Mike, the stock market stumbled again today on news that retail sales dropped a record amount and have now declined for the fourth straight month. Stores are reporting the foot traffic is down between 20 and 40%. Even with deep discounts, stores are unable to entice shoppers to even come in and look. Walmart was the only chain showing growth, but this was tied to increased grocery sales as the formerly middle class search for food. Walmart is cautioning investors that next month's report will not be as rosy. Inventories are down dramatically right before the Christmas rush. Look for even more store closings.
The good news, Cratchit, is that you will have Christmas Day off.
Prairie 2 goes on. Those high-tech jobs that we were promised if everything else was outsourced are rapidly disappearing. Sun Microsystems has joined a very long list of high-tech companies announcing big layoffs. They're cutting 6,000 jobs, citing the complete collapse of the server market. This is particularly bad news since all business now runs on servers. If nobody is buying servers, it not only means that there will be no growth, but they're not even planning to replace equipment that's needed. Prairie 2 goes on. Yesterday's stock market rally was attributed to the successful treasury bond auction, but it was a success only in that somebody, anybody, would buy our worthless paper. The results were compared to 1971, which was not a good year for bonds. This prompted the LIBOR, L-I-B-O-R, London Interbank Overnight Rate. This prompted the LIBOR that uses U.S. Treasury bonds as a floor to jump up 2 basis points. That's more than the LIBOR normally is in total. A change of a hundredth of a point used to be big news. The signals that bank lending is freezing up again, as if it had ever really thawed out. A lot of adjustable rate mortgage home mortgages are linked to the LIBOR. Watch for blood-curdling payment resets in the next few months. Have you been saving, Prairie 2 writes, canned goods, like I've been telling you for the past year? If so, drag a case out from under the bed and take them down to the local food bank. Many are closed now for a week each month. And then go out and buy some more. We aren't out of this yet. P.S. Try to avoid made-in-China food products. The Customs Service, run by the Bush crime family, has finally gotten around to seizing Chinese imports containing milk components, but they only inspect a small fraction of what comes in. But don't worry. The Food and Drug Administration, also run by the Bush crime family, says that, you know, small amounts of melamine won't hurt you. Prairie 2.
Tastes like chicken.
Melamine does? Yeah. Remember back in the day, I don't know if you're old enough, when all of a sudden melamine dinnerware...
I told you this story.
Oh, you told me?
Yeah, I remember the day my mother frantically was searching through the kitchen cabinets, pulling out everything plastic and flipping it over and reading it and throwing it away and saying, my God, I've been microwaving on these. Circa 1980. It was a minor crisis in our house.
Melamine.
We had plates, we had everything, and then it turns out it was in jewelry. Of course, we never ate the jewelry, the plastic melamine jewelry.
That's good. That's good. Is that the stuff now that Molly is always wanting when we go to the...
melamine.
Go to the little fairs, and they sell this junk and for, you know, a dollar bracelet. Molly runs up, can I have that, Daddy? And it doesn't have anything on it made in China or made in, you know, East St. Louis. It's just there.
No, I think that's related to that stuff that if you, you know, the kid's toy that if you ate it turned into the date rape drug in your body.
Oh, my God.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
Little dots.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Jesus.
Little water beads that turned into GHB or something god-awful.
We have a break here. When we come back, we're going to take your phone calls. The number is 800-989-1480 if you're not online. And you want to chat, then... 1 + 1 = 2. You have to get online. 800-989-1480. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
to everything. Turn, turn, turn. There is a season. Turn, turn, turn. And a time to every purpose under heaven. A time to gain, a time to lose.
Radical Talk Radio, make mine Mike Malloy on Nova M.
Twenty-five before the hour, for the Nova M founding members who subscribe, I understand that we have a new video up now at the Malloy's Uncensored Mailbag section. I looked at it before we sent it on to Ben. And, of course, I look like warmed over death, but I did it outside. So, because it was getting harder and harder to breathe inside. So, if you are a subscriber to Nova M Radio, a founding member, the new one is up. It's pretty nasty. They're all nasty. That's the whole reason for putting them up, is to share with you some of the insanity, the pure insanity of some of the people who, some of the trolls who get naked every night, turn out all the lights in their house and listen to this program, and God only knows what they do, but then they feel compelled to write something to me. So check it out, Malloy's Uncensored Mailbag. All right, to your phone calls, as promised, Paula is calling from Bayonne, New Jersey. Paula, welcome to the program. Hi.
Hey, Mike. Let me get this straight. Father Bourgeois was excommunicated for participating in a woman's ordination, but child rapist priests are still Catholics in good standing.
It's an enigma, isn't it, Paula?
You know, this bothers me. You actually had me going last night when you were talking about that priest in South Carolina.
Oh, who said that
Don't
even approach me for the sacraments if you voted for Obama.
Yeah, and now this.
And now this, yeah.
And I guess it bothers me so much because that's the tradition in which I was raised.
Yeah.
And I mean, I went to Catholic school. I have an aunt who's a nun and all that. And I guess because so many years of my life were wasted on it, that it really does bother me.
It upsets me, even though I am, you know, I'm not a believer, but I was raised in the faith, in the Protestant faith. All my friends growing up were Catholic kids. We all hung out together. You know, I understand the catechism. I understand all of this. And one thing I do understand that no matter what anybody believes historically or spiritually, there was a guy apparently named Jesus, Jesus. Well, no, that would be his Spanish cousin. But there was a guy who wandered around the Middle East 2,000 years ago, had a pretty simple message. And a pretty basic message that a lot of great thinkers and great humanists have had subsequent to him and prior to him. And that simple message that if all of us, myself included, were to follow that message, it'd be a hell of a lot better place to live. We have our 70 to suck air on this planet, but nobody wants to do that. And then you have somebody like Father Bourgeois who really works for peace, who really makes an effort his whole life to work for peace. And because he participates in this ordination, he's now to be excommunicated. And weirdly, and this is the part that drives me crazy, Paula, the letter came to him from the Office of the Inquisition. That's not its official title, but that's where the Inquisition arose in the various times in Catholic Church history when the Inquisition was deemed to be necessary. That, to me, is just like, oh, my God.
And I think that's where that was the Pope Nazi's old job.
Yes, it was.
He became the Pope Nazi.
That's what Cardinal Ratzinger was in charge of, yes.
And
scary.
The Pope Nazi was pivotal in covering up the pedophilia.
Yes.
And hiding.
Yes,
pedophilic
again.
Priest. That was his thing. That was his job, was to hide them, to cover it up.
Yes.
Bernard Law got a promotion. Now he's working in the Vatican. And this drives me nuts. And the whole thing with abortion, the church is, I can understand, as a tenant of the faith, that's fine. Don't accept it. Counsel against it, that's fine. I have no problem with that.
Right.
But to tell your, you know, people who follow your faith that to vote for somebody who supports a woman's right to choose,
mm-hmm.
that you can't get communion, that that's a sin, that that you're going to go to hell.
Right.
For voting for somebody who has an opinion, that even having the opinion will send you to hell, whether or not you actually participate
mm-hmm.
in one.
Sure.
Is insane. And the thing that really bothers me, in 2004, when all those bishops were publicly denying John Kerry communion.
Yeah.
Because
he supported the woman's right to privacy. Right?
Exactly.
Same thing.
Which, in a way, was an indirect endorsement of George W. Bush, because what that's doing is telling he's a sinner, he's going to hell, don't
right.
vote for him. George W. Bush, the man who executed more people than any other governor, I think he still holds that record. I think he still holds that record. Now, abortion isn't something the state sanctions. When an abortion performs, it's an individual decision. Executions, however, are. We all participate, whether we want to or not. It's a function of the state.
Right. You don't go to the state to get an abortion. That's right. You go to your private physician, and then and to me, this is where I've said this a million times, Paula. I don't think anyone who works for a woman's right to make that a horrendous choice, and it is. It is a very difficult choice, I would assume. I've had friends who have gotten abortions, and it's not something that is entered into lightly. But to have the state sticking its face in is just beyond belief, and that's one of the reasons for Roe v. Wade. What the justices ruled, it did not have anything to do with abortion per se. It had to do with a woman's right to privacy. And this is where the church, whether it's Protestant or Catholic, this is where, and I don't know about Islam. I know Judaism takes a more neutral position, I think, but this is where the church finds the problem, is in a woman's right to privacy. Because if women start getting all private on us, you see, there's no telling what they might do. So any attempt at this kind of privacy, which is essential privacy, what a woman does with her sexual apparatus. Oh, no. Oh, no, 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 no. Can't have that. So that's, to me, unless I completely misunderstand, and I don't think I do, that's the objection. It is to a woman's right to privacy that irritates the males who have made these decisions.
But the thing is, a politician, John Kerry, is never, well, can't say never, but in his role as a senator or in his role as president, is not going to be a part, have a role in an abortion being performed.
Obama? No, of course not.
No.
Of course
but
not.
Executions, yes.
It's,
yeah, the politicians actually have a role in that, because that is a state function.
Right.
And even, you know what I mean, Catholic citizens, you're mm-hmm. a party to it whether you want to be or not. So you think they would put more effort on that side.
You'd think. Hey, Paula, thanks.
Thanks, Mike. Have a good weekend.
All right, you too. Take care. I've got to work a couple of these emails in, so I'm going to work them in between the calls. So if you're on hold, stay. This is from Chad, who wrote last night, Mike, I know I should expect this crap, but I'm shocked and enraged by the displays of racism lately. You mentioned specifically Idaho and the Hayden Lakes area. I'm originally from New Mexico, where whites are a minority, and there is a great sense of tolerance for everyone. So I wasn't very aware of the racism that still exists throughout the country, not just Alabama. I moved to Spokane, which is only 20 minutes from the Idaho border, thinking, it's Washington. It's a blue state. I have family in the South and have feared for my life in places like Texas just because I don't have that good old boy look. But nothing could have prepared me for the white trash of Spokane. guys with mullets and NASCAR shirts releasing their pit bull on you for getting too close to their double-wide meth lab. There are Confederate flags everywhere. It's 3 hours from the Canadian border, but you would think you were in the Deep South 60 years ago. My friends and I would go to different lakes in Idaho to get out of town, and it's even worse there. I had anti-Bush bumper stickers on my car and had my windows broken about 6 times before I gave up, took it off. My friends and I put up with violent outbursts for looking different, you know, tattoos, piercing, long hair. I finally had to just leave, so I moved to Eugene, Oregon, which is a true liberal town. As soon as I move here, those damn kids outside of Portland put up that Obama effigy. I can't get away from these nut jobs. Not only that, I just learned recently about Oregon history. Before it was a state, land was not allowed to even to be sold to African Americans. Not only that, African Americans were not even allowed to enter the state. And of course, this area was part of that whole white supremacist movement that took root in the Northwest, just like Idaho. Oregon is still about 80% white. As progressive as Portland and Eugene are, every local knows that anything outside of the I-5 cities is hick and racist as can be. I simply can't stand it anymore. This country just determined to remain ignorant and hateful. As much as I'm excited about Obama, it's one event in a whole slew of bull blank. Thank you for your work, even with a cold. Listening to your show keeps me sane. Ish. Chad.
But it don't get me a tight. Cause I live on a lakeside trailer park and everything's gonna be alright. My doctor bills and legal ills. My wife's a fat old horse. My TV's broke. My life's a joke and a sheriff moved next door. But I don't frown, don't get me down. I got something good to say. Cause I live on a lakeside trailer park and everything's gonna be okay.
Winner, see Sandy.
Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you on Nova M Radio.
Don't stop me with kisses. I can't get that from my sisters. Before I get too cranky, you better like hanky panky. Nothing like a good panky. Don't take out your handkerchiefs. I don't want to.
We dedicate this to all the priests out there. You know you still love Madonna. You know you do. It's about 8:30 before the hour. Back to your phone calls on the Malloy program. Amy is calling from Portland, listening on KPOJ. Hey, Amy.
Hey. Already.
You ready?
I'm ready.
Not for a spanking.
No.
Oh, okay.
No. I initially told the gentleman that answers your phones that I was wanting to complain about, you know, the bailout some more. I'm not always able to listen to you, so I missed some of your
right,
rants.
Right.
And the more I sit here, I just think like, I feel like, have you read that book to Molly, the Zeus book, The Who of Whoville?
Oh, yeah.
You know that one where, you know, the people in the end are going, we are here, we are here.
Yes.
And I feel like that's what
Horton,
we're trying to...
Isn't that Horton Hears a Who?
Horton Hears a Who.
Right.
But it's the Who of Whoville, and that's us.
Yes.
And we're yelling. We're yelling, we are here, we are here, and nobody can hear us.
That's so much the truth. I'm having a hard time with the begging being done by the automobile industry out of Detroit. On the one hand... I said this the other night, having grown up in a feeder city for the Detroit auto industry back in the 50s, I just feel like a dedication to the auto industry. On the other hand, knowing how the auto industry has totally ignored us, totally jammed garbage down our throats, totally whined and bitched and complained when they were told to put catalytic converters on back in the 70s. Oh, we can't do that! When they were told to up the mileage, the CAFE standards. Oh, we can't do that! Meanwhile, the car companies who are not dying did that.
Right, so Toyota and Honda are...
It's very hard. Yeah, it's very hard to... because after all, this is a capitalist system, and well, sort of. And aren't they supposed to live or die by that very system? If that's the case, good night, goodbye.
But they threaten us with, oh, but all these people will lose their jobs, and all the continuing people.
I know.
That's what they did with us, you know, on this recent bailout. Oh, you know, it's going to crash, and you're going to lose your pensions and your IRAs and all your money that you have in the market.
And guess what?
We did anyway.
We did anyway, yeah.
You know, we gave him $700 billion, and I think, and I all of a sudden, not all of a sudden, I'm sure this is some plan they have, but the Federal Reserve gave AIG over $100 billion.
Mm-hmm.
And now the Treasury, as I understand it, is also going to give AIG.
They're back for more.
For $40 billion. It's like, who is connected to AIG? Who are they insuring?
Right.
Who's invested in them? Why do these people are sucking so much? Because they're not American owned. Aren't they? Weren't they created in China?
I believe you're right. It's American International Group, but I think the Home Office, I may be wrong on this, I think the Home Office is in China.
I mean, it seems to be so weird. You know,
well, it is. I'll tell you something. Let me say this. In the past 6 months, the most exciting part of the New York Times to me every day now is the business section. Some of the best writing in the country is being done by these business writers for the New York Times who are writing about this. And today's issue of the Times and yesterday's issue of the Times is a good example of that. The writers for the New York Times are just ripping these bastards new body orifices because of the way they are whining and pleading for help, and they get the help at the taxpayers' expense. They turn around, waste it, then they come back and ask for more help. It's just incredible what's going on. So I'm with you. I'm so sick of these.
And the Federal Reserve has given out like $200 billion or more, and won't tell us where the money went to. Of course, the Federal Reserve is neither, but. It's like, whoa, you're handing out all this money, but we can't know. Paulson's handing out money, and there's no oversight by Congress.
Yeah.
They barely, you know.
Well, it's none of our business. It's only our money.
Right.
Yeah. And it's not really our money. We don't have any. It is, we're just being put on the hook for it.
Right.
For the next 30, 40, 50 years. I have a 4-year-old, and I know that when I'm long gone, my daughter Molly will probably, if there's still such a thing as a job, when she is an adult, that she will be paying for this.
Right.
So it's I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. You know, at times when I feel sorry for myself, and I don't have a bad life. I have a pretty good life.
Mm-hmm.
And I've made my choices, as my brother the Republican likes to say. It's, you know, take personal responsibility.
Oh yeah.
And I said, okay, yeah, I've done them. Okay, I'm on to that. So I don't. I'm sitting here. I don't have cable. I don't have a car. I don't have a cell phone. I don't have a computer.
Oh, my God.
You know, so it's, yeah, the computer, you know, got one of those damn viruses or whatever and crashed and burned, and I can't get on to the Internet to at least, you know what you're going to talk about each night.
Yeah.
And, But I do have taxes.
Yeah, we all have that. Amy, I got to leave it there. Thanks a lot. I appreciate what you had to say. Take care. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back, 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Program on the Nova M Radio Network. Thank you for joining in the fun and frivolity here every evening. This is just kind of preamble to an email I got, but I want to share this with you. Holocaust survivors said this past Monday that they're trying to negotiate with the Mormon Church over posthumous baptisms of Jews killed in Nazi concentration camps. And the Holocaust survivors are saying the Mormon Church has repeatedly violated a 13-year-old agreement between the Jews and the Mormons that would bar these intrusive Mormons from reaching into somebody else's religion and baptizing people who died 80 years ago. There is this thing in the Mormon Church, I'm sure you are aware of this, baptism by proxy, I think, is what it's called, and it allows Mormons to have their ancestors baptized, and that's supposed to reunite all the families in the, you know, afterlife. But there's so many religious practices that to me are just an outrage. You know, like excommunication in the Catholic Church. To tell someone, well, because you support this or believe that, you are condemned to eternal damnation and hell. And I mean, the arrogance of that. But anyway, leaders of the Mormon Church say they are making changes to their massive genealogical database that will make it more difficult for names of Holocaust victims to be entered for posthumous baptism by proxy. However, Ernest Michael or Michelle, honorary chairman of the American Gathering of Holocaust Survivors, said that's not enough. At a news conference in New York this past Monday, he said the Mormon Church also must, quote, implement a mechanism to undo what you have done, end quote. Well, with all due respect, Mr. Michael, they haven't done anything. It's just nonsense, utter nonsense. Anyway, Michael went on and said, baptism of a Jewish Holocaust victim and then merely removing that name from the database is not acceptable. And by the way, this man had both of his parents executed at Auschwitz. He spoke, we mentioned this last Monday, the 70th anniversary of Kristallnacht. Mr. Michael went on and said in his statement released ahead of the news conference, he said, quote, we ask you to respect us and our Judaism just as we respect your religion. We ask you to leave our 6 million Jews, all victims of the Holocaust, alone. They suffered enough. And Ernest Michael, honorary chair of the American Gathering of Holocaust Survivors, said that he, as recently as last week, he had tried to convince the Mormon leaders to stop this. He said his group will not sue, but that the only thing left, therefore, is to turn to the court of public opinion. That's gagging. I mean, that is stomach-turning. That one group of religious nutcases would reach into another religion's dead and say, well, we're going to baptize you. But no, we don't believe in that. Excuse me? No, it doesn't matter. We're going to baptize you anyway. But don't. Don't do that. We're going to do it anyway. Don't do it. No, sorry. We're going to do it anyway. My God. I mean, and some of you wonder why I've opted for atheism. All right. Now, that was preamble to this email I got from Bob Kincaid at headonradio.com. And if you haven't gone there, I always say the same thing. Why not? Headonradio.com. It's some of the most intense talk radio you'll find on the net. Bob writes, Mike, the Saudi government hosted a UN meeting this week on religious tolerance. This is the same government that sponsors a secret police called the Committee for promotion of virtue and prevention of vice. They whip women who cast a wayward glance through the mesh of their beekeeper suits at a man who isn't their husband. In addition, their children learn to read from books that teach literacy with phrases like, "And the rock shall say, O faithful Muslim, a filthy Jew is hiding behind me. Come and kill the filthy Jew." 1,000 miles or so away, in Rome, an unrepentant Nazi is going to excommunicate a priest who dared to think that a woman was as potentially holy as a man. And yet across another ocean to the west, a church, this would be the Mormons, that believes it can baptize Jews murdered during the Holocaust, spends millions of its members' dollars to undermine the Constitution. That would be Prop 8 in California. Like Muhammad, this cult's founder declared himself the seal of the prophets. If these poisonous thugs ever figure out how much they all have in common, the rest of us are screwed to the wall like a butterfly pinned to the bottom of the cigar box. Bob. Yeah. The Mormon Church, who finds some sort of validity, reason, honor, whatever, fill in the blank, in plunging its hands into somebody else's names of the dead, and taking out the histories of these people and then baptizing them. The same group who will spend millions, as Bob points out, to legislate, undermine the Constitution against people who are still alive. Don't these Mormon sons of bitches understand that what they did with Prop 8 is pretty much the same thing that the Nazis did in Germany that resulted in part in the death of millions upon millions of people, and yet the Mormons, in their sickness, are willing to... I don't get this. What are you going to do, Mormons? After gay folk have been murdered, are you going to baptize them into the Book of the Living, or whatever the hell you call it? What are you going to do? Or are gay people completely beyond the pale? You miserable bastards. I do get carried away. Sorry. They're back. We are coming to you. This is from the Times Online of the UK. Barack Obama is warned to beware of a huge threat from Al-Qaeda. General Michael Hayden, director of the CIA, this week acknowledged that there were dangers during a presidential transition when new officials were coming in and getting accustomed to the challenges. Oh, he added, there is nothing to indicate that anything had been detected, but it's there! Bush has repeatedly described the acute vulnerability of the U.S. during a transition. The Bush administration has been defined largely by the 9/11 attacks. Bush's aides have pointed to Al-Qaeda's first assault on the World Trade Center, which occurred little more than a month after Bill Clinton became president in 1993. There was the alleged attempt to bomb Glasgow Airport in Gordon Brown's first days in Downing Street, and the London nightclub attack was nearly thwarted. Yeah, these terrorists or resistors, take your pick, deliberately time their acts of violence to coincide with a transition in government. Yeah, oh, that makes sense. But this is what the crazies in the West want everybody to believe. See, the Crusades are not over. They never ended. The Crusades are still on. We are going to beat those goddamn Muslims no matter what. We are going to beat them. We are going to take back Jerusalem. We are going to take back the Holy Land. We are going to defeat the goddamn Muslims. We are going to... Oh, wait a minute. That was 1,000 years ago. Oh, I'm sorry. We'll be right back.
your day screaming with Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
22 past the hour. Prairie 2 wrote in real quick. I think it was Paula and Bayonne had the question about AIG. Was it Paula? Maybe not. AIG was founded in China about 100 years ago, but with the Japanese occupation, etc., they have been a U.S. company for a long time, but they owe hundreds of billions to China and others for all these credit default swaps. Okay, there you go. See, that's why he's our economic advisor. Another email, then back to your phone calls. This is from Steve from yesterday. Mike, I'm working late tonight listening to your show. I was compelled to write. You were talking about the redness of Rexburg, Idaho, and the eight-year-olds on the bus chanting about assassination and such. I live in a town near there in Wyoming. I have a short story. I have a daughter in sixth grade. She came home a couple of weeks before the election to tell me about the results of her classroom mock election. She was the only kid that voted for Obama and was ridiculed for it. It makes me feel so sad that my community has allowed their children to lose sight of the importance of what was happening for the pathetic moral issues of the leaders of their godforsaken Mormon church. She was told, my daughter was told throughout the day, that she is an abortion believer and that only people who believe in killing babies would vote for Obama. The thing that strikes me the hardest is that my daughter only has a vague idea of what an abortion is. So I'm wondering how many of those 11 and 12-year-old kids understand fully what an abortion is. I knew this was going to be an issue because I've lived in this community and communities just like this my entire life. I also knew that eventually my wife and I were going to have to answer some tough questions from our daughter dealing with abortion. But why should a father have to defend who he believes will be the greatest president in U.S. history to his daughter because the parents of her friends are so narrow-minded that they would tell a child that they can't vote for a candidate because he believes in abortion? I know you ranted about this for a while tonight. That was last night. Just wanted you to know that Rexburg isn't the only place where our children are being abused with this short-sightedness. Steve. Yeah, I wonder sometimes, too. These issues were not issues when my other kids were growing up. As I've said before, my youngest, other than Molly, is 30. And that's my son, Chris. And I was a single parent during his during the time he was 4 until he was 16. So I didn't have the normal conflicts that you have when you have two parents raising a child. And I respect those conflicts. Kathy and I go through this all the time with Molly. It's nothing major. It's just, you know, when you have one parent, there is an upside to being a single parent, and that is you can pretty much put into your child whatever you want, hoping, of course, that what you put in there is good stuff. And I think that I did a pretty good job with Chris. And he's told Kathy that he thinks I did too. So, but with Molly, these are issues that that she's going to have to deal with. And like most parents, like Steve, like any parent, Kathy and I have not yet decided how we are, because it hasn't come up, how we are going to deal with this. But Molly starts kindergarten next year. She's been in preschool for the past 2 years. She starts kindergarten next year. And she'll probably go to a public school. And I'll be curious to see how she presents us with these issues. I believe in that theory that you answer your child's questions, but you do wait until the child asks the question, and you only answer the specifics of the question you're being asked. I think that makes a lot of sense around issues that children get concerned about early on, whether they're death, sex, rock and roll. I mean, you have to explain to your child as best you can who the greatest guitar player was. You know, you can't let her grow up with wrong ideas about that. And drummer, especially drummer. You know, that would be Ginger Baker, I think. But
yes, we recently had to teach Molly a little playground lesson about how not to play Panties and bottoms.
Panties and bottoms. Yeah, she came home from preschool and said that that was the new game out on the playground during recess. Oh, how do you play panties and bottoms, Molly? Well, there's this boy, and he says that, you know, in order to get into the club, and where's the club? It's under the slide.
Now, it's always under something.
It's always under something.
When it's a panties and bottoms game, you notice that it's never like, well, we're sitting there right out in the open in the sandbox in front of all the teachers.
Right. Now, you have to understand that during recess at Molly's preschool, there are probably, oh, I don't know, 9 adults out there. But these
they're all on crack. I don't know how they missed that
but
one.
But these little boogers figure out a way to do this. Panties and bottoms. How do you play that, Molly? Well, if you want to be in the club, you have to show your panties and your bottom.
Because the past,
oh, hell no,
is just a goodbye. Teach your children well. Their fathers have did slowly go by. And feed them on your dream, the one they picked.
The Mike Malloy Show on Nova M Radio. Talk radio matters here.
We were young together. We were on the ball. We did not believe in the writing on the wall. We did our best work in the dark. We did our thinking on the run. We would hang together. Or they'd hang
25 before the hour. All right, back to your phone calls. Who's up next? Jeremy, calling from Huntington Beach, California. Jeremy, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. I wonder if I'm the only one who's a little suspicious of the IMF being taken over by Paul Wolfowitz. If anyone's read John Perkins' book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, they're notorious for basically purposely making loans to countries based on false, you know, rosy projections so that they'll default, so that they can start taking over their resources and threatening their governments with, like, capital flight.
Well, also, you know, yeah, also, they also follow this Chicago school neoliberalism, which says open up your markets, cut your spending, forget about health care, forget about education, tough it out for 10, 15 years, everything will be okay. But here's the upside. As far as I know, Jeremy, the upside is that so many countries now have learned the hard way what the IMF can do to their economies, as well as their education system, their healthcare system, their infrastructure, that a lot of countries now are refusing to deal with the IMF. That's one of the reasons Venezuela is seen as a real pariah here in Norte Americano. It's because, or Norte America, it's because Chavez has, I remember reading this somewhere, I can't cite the source right now, but Chavez is interested in putting together a consortium of countries, among this consortium, of course, his would probably be the leader, where grants and loans are made that do not have anything to do with the IMF, because the IMF, as you point out, is notorious for taking a country into absolute bankruptcy so that the assets then can be glommed up by the Western or the industrialized nations. So I think that so many countries are becoming aware of that trick bag that you're pointing out.
Maybe that's why they're after us now, because we're the only one that apparently hasn't learned as far as American citizens, you know. I mean, maybe they're so afraid that Obama's going to get his way that they're just going to basically, you know, take the economy hostage and, you know, drain the economy. I mean, they say they're freeing up the credit markets. Why are they bailing out Goldman Sachs? They don't lend credit. They actually make the dollar worth something. They have the assets which would, you know, make the dollar worth something, or, you know, they could actually cause capital flight themselves, I suppose.
Well, I think this is just Act 3, or maybe it's the epilogue of what the Republicans have been trying to do now since the Reagan years, and that is to completely and totally bankrupt the country. David Brooks, a conservative who writes op-ed column for the New York Times today, and I recommend this. When we hang up here, Jeremy, you ought to read this. Go to New York Times Online. It's titled Bailout to Nowhere. And, you know, I said early in the program tonight, all of a sudden I'm finding myself in agreement more than in disagreement with a conservative like David Brooks. David Brooks is not a Republican. He's a conservative. And there is a vast, vast difference. But you might want to read his piece. Also, Naomi Klein, writing at thenation.com, and this is posted today also, Wall Street's bailout is a trillion-dollar crime scene. Both of those, and Naomi Klein and David Brooks have very little in common except their perception of what's really happening. So if you haven't read those two today, Jeremy, God, do it, because it's exactly what you're talking about.
I will.
All right?
I will. Thanks.
All right, man. Thanks, Jeremy. I appreciate you checking in. Yeah, the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, I'm surprised. I've forgotten about that. The Wolfowitz, a real scumsucker if ever one existed. This guy is so bad. Plus, I understand that he has the stinkiest breath in government. Just absolute stinky, stinky halitosis that people can't stand to be that close to him. How he was shtupping the woman at the World Bank, I have no idea, unless maybe she wore a gas mask or something. But, you know, he gets broomed out of the World Bank because of his inability to keep his fly zipped and make sure that, you know, his inability to keep his hoe off the payroll. It sounds like Bill Clinton, doesn't it? But not that his hoe was on the payroll, yada, yada. But here he is again, like a bad penny. You know, you keep throwing Wolfowitz away, throw him out of the Defense Department. Wasn't he in the Defense Department? Yeah. He was one of the architects of the invasion and occupation of Iraq. Throw him out of there. He winds up in the World Bank. Throw him out of there. He winds up in the IMF fund. This guy, every time I see his face, I mean, when you look at him, you know he's got stinky breath. You know that if you get near him, I hate to be his dentist. Wouldn't you hate to be his dental hygienist? He probably never goes. But wouldn't you hate to be the person who has to sit there and say, all right, open your mouth, Wolfowitz. Oh, God, close your mouth quick.
I think I would rather hate to be his barber, knowing that he might come in behind you and lick all the combs.
Yeah, I know. Wasn't that? I mean, Wolfowitz, he's got a lot of class. It's all third. But, oh, my God, what a guy. What a guy. What did I do? Just because I gave my girlfriend a job? What? Is something wrong with that? Clinton did it. Okay, he didn't. But, you know, everybody else does. What's wrong with that? You don't like me licking my comb? Here, you see this? It's not my ring finger. You see this? All right. Goodbye. I hate these people. Frank is calling from New Mexico, listening on Sirius. Frank, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. Listen, how are you?
I wanted to say something about Jesus and gays real quick, but first, I heard today on another program earlier that, you know, this minister has said, as a matter of fact, that they have found that there's no gene for gay people. And I'd like to say the guy didn't challenge him, but there's no way that you can make a statement like that.
No, of course no not.
Gene. I mean, it's just ridiculous. But anyway, here's my thing on Jesus. It seems that the gay people, and I had an uncle that was gay, and I have a nephew that's gay, and I've known other people that were gay, and I'm straight. But the bottom line is, the gay people are more like Jesus than these ministers.
How so?
And these, you know, and these people, I mean, in other words,
Wait. How so?
Well, they're more caring about other people. They're more honest. They're more.
Now, wait. Where are you going with this? Because this is, I think what you're showing here, and you're not realizing what you're showing. You're categorizing a whole group of people unfairly. Gay folk are just like you and me. There's no difference. They are not. This is, you know, it kind of bothers me, Frank, when I hear people make blanket statements about gay people, about people of color, about Irish people, about Italians, because in doing it, and this is sad, and I'm not jumping in your case, Frank. I'm trying to be a kind uncle to you. When you make a statement about, well, gay people are more this and gay people are more that, you're displaying, without realizing it, an attitude toward gay people that is not really, I think, what gay people, quote, quote, would like you to display toward them. There's no such thing as, as a collective attitude or point of view where it concerns issues we all deal with in the gay community. I mean, gay people, un-gay people, black people, un-black people, Jewish people, un-Jewish people, you know, pick any subgroup so-called that you want to. Latino people, un-Latino people. Try to do this, Frank, and I sound like I'm preaching, and I apologize, because I try not to do this, not really. Try to approach people on an individual basis. You know, I've known gay people who are absolute bastards, and I wouldn't want anything to do with them, but it doesn't have anything to do with their being gay or not. It has to do that they were just real jerkasses. You understand what I'm saying? So, I met black folk who are just absolutely screwed to the ground, don't have the sense God gave a beanstalk. But so what? I mean, that doesn't mean that black people do this or white people do that or gay people do that. I'm sorry. I'm preaching. I'm lecturing, and I don't mean to. But Frank, gay people are no more like Jesus than people named Frank. Trust me on that. I wouldn't lead you astray, my friend. Okay, I would not lead you astray. White heterosexual males have to be careful, and white heterosexual females have to be careful of those statements. You know, gay people are this, black people are that. Never mind. Thanks, Frank. I appreciate you checking in, pal. I hope you don't feel like I was getting too weird with you. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Molloy. Stay with us. Crew, all of whom should be in jail. Ian Alf, Ben Burt, Sharon Gordy, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Bruce Enberg, and Kathy Bay. For all the programs this week. All right, couple of emails here. Oh, by the way, let me say it again. We have a new video up for those of you who are Nova M founders. Go to NovaMradio.com and you will find Molloy's Uncensored Mailbag, and it's really grungy stuff. I question why we do this, but we'll continue to do it for a while, because every time I decide not to do it and let a couple 3 weeks go by, I get these emails. Where's Molloy's Uncensored Mailbag? We love it. It is kind of fun. So it's there. And we have a nice backdrop this week, rather than our dingy dark studio here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains. We did it outside on the back porch so you can see the beautiful fall foliage while I say all these bad words that come up in the emails. It's a real juxtaposition of Beauty and the Beast, so to speak. This is from Becky in Portland, who writes, Mike, I'm sitting at home doing homework and shaking my head at your show tonight. She's writing last night, I believe. My best friend is a third grade teacher in Peoria, Arizona, and she has called me several times to talk about how disturbed she is by the pure hatred coming out of her students' mouths in regards to Obama. Stuff like assassinate him, he should be hanged, he's going to take our guns and lock us up, blah, blah, blah. Obviously, their parents are to blame, and I agree with you that it is indeed child abuse. She says that this type of talk started when he beat Hillary for the nomination and has now escalated into a daily occurrence. My best friend has actually had to stop class and make the students write about why it's not okay to say such negative things about anyone. It's just unbelievable. So it seems to be a nationwide occurrence. I blame the whole Palin and McNasty. I guess that would be McCain. For inciting the ignorant faithful of the country. I just pray that Obama's Secret Service is vigilant. We both know that these are the people buying up all these guns recently. Becky in Portland. And this from Carla, who writes also, was this last night? Dear Mike, I thought I heard you talking about the Obama effigy incident, which took place at George Fox University, a Quaker school, this past September. If I heard you correctly, you said that the school is in McMinnville, Oregon. That's incorrect. The school is up the road a few miles at Newburgh, Oregon. Okay, Carla, I was just citing the news source. Anyway, Carla goes on. We just moved from the San Francisco Bay Area as economic exiles to McMinnville, Oregon, a few months ago, and are in a rental house with most of our stuff in storage, waiting for our beloved home of 34 years to sell back in Palo Alto. It's very scary. Our house hit the market at the same time as the economic meltdown in September. Due to my husband's unemployment and many medical expenses, we had to suck equity from our house in order to live for about the past 8 years. We moved here because it is much cheaper to live here. Our hearts have been broken by having to leave our home. We're homesick and know no one here, but so far we are pleased with the town of McMinnville, which seems to be pleasant, if somewhat conservative. As a new resident of McMinnville, I wanted to be sure the town wasn't wrongly identified as being the location of the disgusting event at George Fox University. We can't afford to move again. A longtime friend, Carla, and her last name. Well, we have something here I didn't get to tonight. I will try to get to it first thing Monday, and that is, Christmas is just around the corner, and that usually begins the holiday wars. Huh? Don't you love this country? I may have time to get into this. There's a new ad, a new combatant in the Christmas wars. There's an ad proclaiming, "Why believe in God? Just be good for goodness sake." And the ad is appearing in Washington, D.C. buses starting next week, and they're going to run through December. The American Humanist Association unveiled this campaign ad earlier this week, Tuesday, I think. They lift lyrics from "Santa Claus is Coming to Town," and this Washington-based group is wading into what has become a perennial debate over commercialism, religion in the public square, and the meaning of Christmas. Fred Edwards, who's a spokesman for the humanist group, said, quote, "We are trying to reach our audience, and sometimes in order to reach an audience, everybody has to hear you. Our reason for doing it during the holidays is there's an awful lot of agnostics, atheists, and other types of non-theists who feel a little alone during the holidays because of its association with traditional religion," end quote. So to that end, the ads and posters will include a link to a website that will seek to connect and organize like-minded thinkers in the D.C. area, according to Mr. Edwards. Now, this group defines humanism as, quote, "a progressive philosophy of life that, without theism, affirms our responsibility to lead ethical lives of value, value to self and to humanity, end quote. Now, last month, the British Humanist Association caused a ruckus announcing a similar campaign on London buses, and their message was, there's probably no God, now stop worrying and enjoy your life. Well, I, you know, as a working atheist and humanist or whatever the hell I am, I just don't subscribe to the religious falderal. I really don't. I tried it. It was too painful. But I have a great time at Christmas. I really do. I have a good time at Christmas. I love the Christmas story as laid out in Luke. I love all the nonsense and the holiday stuff. And I would advise my good humanist brothers and sisters to do the same. You know what I'm saying? Have a good weekend. Take care. Keep it lit. Oh, and by the way, Kevin Kinney, have a great weekend wherever you are. I'm going back.